kid is my uncle. He choked me to death.
Whenever anybody says they're a little concerned, they're very concerned.
So what? What's wrong with being sexy?
Hello!
Hello!
La 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 la. And welcome
<Fra-la-la>.
to 2021. We survived the eclipse. Well, wait, yeah, last show you guys heard was the new one. We'll talk about that in a second. My name's Joseph Eastwood Fresh. With me, as usual, Zadok Woolridge and the Shark. What's going on, fellas?
Doctor.
It's kind of gray and rainy and windy, and I'm seepy.
Yeah. Now, did you hang
out
with...
Boys, I'm in Nash, Vegas.
Oh, that's right.
It's sunny and nice and awesome.
That's right. Well, it's...
Y'all down there in Tennessee?
You know what? I'm not sure if Tennessee still counts Nashville as part of them or not.
I don't think they do.
I don't think they do.
I think there's a bit of a rift there.
Well, and after, you know, and don't forget that some girl at a college somewhere down south posted that you can't be black and country because she's taking a hard stand against Beyonce's new album.
Oh man,
she don't like Hootie.
She don't like Hootie. She don't like Charlie Pride.
Everybody loves Hootie.
No. You can't be. You can live in the country. Oh, you should see it. It's blowing up. Like I'm seeing people say this girl just destroyed any job she's ever gonna have.
Well,
in
I
history.
Hope so.
But she,
hey,
she
white
came
folks,
up to,
we got bad news for you that white people didn't invent country music either.
Yep, thank you. Thank you.
Sorry.
Now, Rob, I did have a question for you before I forget. Pretty cool. You got to hang out, one of the last people to hang out with OJ at PK's before he died yesterday.
It was cool, wasn't it? OJ sure. at PK's was amazing.
I tell you what, I cannot believe poor OJ is dead. There is rumors that he used the bathroom at PK's, and that's why he is dead.
Ah, well, that.
Oh no, they've
that,
that's
no, they
that's see
it.
That
know,
that's
got
to be one of the false rumors, right? All right, they got a new job
oh,
in there now.
Is it nice?
Know?
I haven't been in there to see it. Is it nice? Because that was
it's
a,
it's
a terrifying place.
You got to build
it's nicer
up,
than it used to be.
You got
to
build up your immunity to that sort of thing. You know what I mean? You got to be exposed, much like the aliens in War of the Worlds. Like if you're not exposed to that. To that germ that lives within that hole.
Now, tell me about it, man. One time, this was around 92 or 3, I was plugging in guitar pedals on the stage of PK's and made the mistake of like putting my knee down on the floor of the stage. Mm-hmm. And I
kiss
still
those
got a,
pants goodbye.
You know, little rash there. I got to take a shot, you know, a couple times a year.
Yeah.
Now, that the truth was is that floor was it was carpet and it was the stickiest, nastiest. It was in a perpetual state of moist.
Oh,
and like
yeah.
after I pulled my leg back up, my pant leg was like stuck to my knee.
It was
the grossest thing you've ever seen in your life. It's horrible. It's bad.
PK is one of our beautiful sponsors. Had a lot of celebrity spy sightings there over the eclipse, but we didn't. That wasn't the last episode that went out. The last episode was the new spinoff of 20 and 21. I don't know if you guys listened to it. It's called...
Not yet.
Was this you and Koppel watching an 80s movie?
Yes, it just came out. We did Roadhouse 89, and the name of the new show is This Podcast Really Ties the Room Together.
I like it.
And
like
we had a couple audio issues. James was a little quiet.
Well, Koppel was there. Of course it screwed up.
Yeah. His mic, he needs to get a little closer to the mic. I need to turn it up just a hair. But besides that, it was a blast. You guys should check it out. It's us discussing Roadhouse.
You were able to get Koppel pulled away. I heard last time anybody saw him, he was shooting pool with Woody Harrelson at Styx.
Well, that's true. And Woody, you know, of course, his dad famously is in prison here. I guess he killed couple birds with one stone there. The old dad,
oh, man.
The eclipse.
Oh, dang old man.
Him and Seth Rose, him and Rogan probably hanging out, you know, smoking that good Carbondale weed.
I guess. I'm surprised they weren't at the cellar hanging out with Macaulay Culkin.
Well, now the problem is that James Franco was
the
there,
cellar.
and
dude,
Rogan's
James
trying
Franco
to stay
was
away
at,
from
he
Franco.
Was at Garden of the Gods. Yeah, but
well,
Franco's
yeah,
Garden of
the Gods, from what I heard.
Yeah, that was a false rumor that he was in Carbondale. That was one of the BS.
Oh, that one real?
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah.
Speaking of Hootie,
yeah.
Hootie.
Now Demi Moore was on the strip. I heard she was at the Varsity Show.
Really?
mm-hmm.
That's wild. I heard that a lot of
I've always heard she's a big fan of the Varsity.
Yeah, she came with Tatum O'Neal.
Oh, nice.
Tatum O'Neal.
I love Tatum.
Wow.
Tatum O'Neal was great in Rescue Me as the crazy sister. I loved her in that show.
Ah, I never watched that show.
Yeah, it's a good show. It's a good show. But it's like anything else, the last couple seasons, it's like this has went on too long, so is this showtime? But those first four or five seasons are solid.
Man. Well, I am glad you got to see OJ before he died.
Yeah.
Did you tell him off?
The juice.
Did you tell him
the
what?
The juice is spoiled.
The juice is really loose. The juice is spoiled. The juice is separated into vinegar and sugar.
The juice has no pulp.
It's not confirmed, but somebody said that Randy Quaid was getting chocolate chips down at Crustado's.
Oh, no, that's fact. That's fact.
You say, was that one a real one?
That one's real because
now,
I
which
was
Quaid
down
was
there.
It? Was it the crazy Quaid or the good? The
not crazy Quaid.
The middle crazy
Randy,
Quaid.
Yeah.
They're all crazy.
It was Cousin Eddie.
Oh,
and
that
the reason
one.
That you knew it was him is he was dressed just like Christmas Vacation. Like he was walking around like that,
you know,
which is kind of crazy. And he kept saying he was looking for John Candy.
Well, I was going to
say, what
he,
was talking
he
about.
Kept talking about, I heard some reports there. I saw a couple clips people were telling me. That he was just walking around, and he was wearing an Obama mask, and he's kept talking about the Hollywood star bangers. He said, the star bangers are coming for me. The star bangers are coming for me. I don't know what he's talking about. But and then he started talking about how Richard Pryor and Marlon Brando would have sex with each other. He started talking about how Marlon Brando would have sex with Richard Pryor. And he was just giving him back shots.
Back shots.
Just pounding back shots into Richard Pryor. And you know how Richard Pryor famously would make his eyes great big and like, oh.
Oh, boy.
That's what happens.
It was good old days when they used to have specials on back shots Thursday night at Frankie's.
That's right.
Was it
back
the
shot special Thursday night, baby. But Brando, and this is also in the phase of Brando when he was started wearing a moo-moo and just constantly had gas all the time. According to people that were close to him, he just literally crapped all the time and just farted constantly. He only wore moo-moos. This is when he was having sex with Pryor, allegedly.
Okay.
So that's what Quaid said. Anyway, have you seen the Joker 2 Folie-a-Doo trailer? I hope there's more dancing.
Okay. I've seen it, and can I just say something real quick? I gotta get this off my chest.
Get it off
I'm
there before
all these
it crushes you.
That are like, they're so like, they're like, this looks awesome. This looks amazing.
Really?
And I'm like, really? Because it's just the same movie. So they're both gonna live in their heads these fantasies that they're out doing stuff. Great movie. Yeah, I've seen this before. Last time.
Yeah,
not
I didn't
nearly
like...
as exciting as Joe Piscopo and Andy Dick hanging out at Quattro's the other day.
That kind of disappointed me because I was like, oh, man, really?
I know because I couldn't decide who the real Dick was, and then it occurred to me, it's Piscopo.
It's Piscopo, yeah. Well,
you know, that's a little tidbit for you, Robbie. Did you know that Richard Nixon was called Tricky Dick because he was a uncanny, smooth political operator, and also he was a dick?
Oh, really? Because when you said that, all I could think is smooth operator. Smooth.
Somebody get on that. We need an AI version of Nixon singing smooth operator.
Oh, no, we don't. Was
it Jade? Was that who sang that song? She really thought she was like Madonna level. Like, I'm going one name, bitch. You're going to remember it. And I'm having trouble remembering it. Folie-a-Doo, I saw the trailer. I was not impressed with Folie-a-Doo trailer. I just thought, like, same as you said, I've already seen this. I did not like the first one. I watched it once. I was like, oh, you just remade a Scorsese movie with the Joker, and that's what movies have become now. I didn't care for it. Did you guys see that Dune, the AMC heads are... Wish they hadn't made the Dune popcorn buckets. Have you seen this story?
I'm sure they haven't. When I got my 12-year-old son has made nonstop jokes about it since he saw one the day the movie came out. If a 12-year-old's already on top of the joke, I think we know where we're going.
I didn't see that, but I did see Richard Greco and Michael Madsen at the ball parking lot the other day during the eclipse.
No.
Mall parking lot. Well, they would have been hard. They wouldn't have been hard to spot. They've been the only two people there.
The only people there.
Well, I almost mistook them for Crispin Glover and James Woods, but you know.
God, I wish I could meet Crispin Glover. I got questions.
So you can punch him in the face?
I got
Letterman.
So many questions for him.
Can you imagine how bad a handshake from Crispin Glover has to feel?
Can you imagine how much I wouldn't even do that? I would run. If I saw him, hey, you, get your damn hand over here, I would run away.
That's a really good
handshake. That's got to be the worst handshake in the world. Oh, that's so bad.
No, these popcorn buckets. They gave him out these popcorn buckets, and then even the president of AMC was in an interview the other day and said he regrets it, and yes, he agrees they look like buttholes.
I mean, how many jokes did I hear about getting extra butter for the popcorn bucket while you're watching the movie?
I gotta get my whole fist in this thing to get popcorn out.
I mean, seriously, like, I saw one in person at the theater, and I just looked at it, I was like, oh dear God. Like, I thought this was a good idea. I'm telling you, two morons, like me and Shark, were sitting there and pitched the idea, and all the executives were like, go with it, because they don't pay attention. They don't care. And it was like, oh my God, that was a joke, and they went for it. Oh my God,
right?
how far can we push this? And now it's like
the Greenville anus flag. It's like, how did you not see it? How did you not see that?
Come on.
Yeah.
Oh.
Kind of like, although I did see Tom Berenger and F. Murray Abraham hanging out in front of the varsity.
F. Murray Abraham? Good Lord.
The Berenger was believable, but Abraham.
Yeah.
F. Murray threw
me
Berenger off
was
a little
bit. Berenger was actually on top of the varsity with a scope and was checking things out. But
I heard that he went blind because he was trying to snipe the eclipse.
He was trying to snipe the eclipse.
And he didn't realize you can't look at it with us.
He's like, this is going to blow my flat earth theory out the window. I got to do something to stop it.
Yeah, be careful, man. Look at the eclipse, you'll have Forrest Whitaker eye.
Oh, no. Hey, have you seen the meme of Forrest Whitaker going around where his eye that's open completely, above it, they have written sativa, and under the eye that's dirty, they have written... I'm not kidding you.
That's horrible.
I got a question, culture question here.
Yeah.
I am hearing rave, crazy, crazy good rave reviews about the Monkey Fighter or whatever.
Yeah.
And we haven't talked about it at all. Is anyone interested in seeing this? Because I'm getting more interested every day.
Slightly, kind of.
I mean, I'm hearing it's just fantastic.
Yeah, I heard it was really fun. Like, just a movie that's, yeah. A little bit. I like that guy who directed it. I've never thought he was like... You know, but I like that he went out on his own and did this thing, and it's getting rave reviews. So yeah, I definitely am interested in it. I really thought you were gonna say Fallout.
That was what I was gonna say next. Is because they dropped the whole thing, and Samantha cannot wait to watch it because she's played the games.
I love.
See,
the games.
I thought you were gonna say you saw Chaz Plum and Terry on the strip the other day.
No, I absolutely loved Fallout. It was like they made a series of them. I think it's definitely James Koppel's favorite game of all time.
Okay, well, that gives me pause because I've seen some of the games he likes. But
it's literally open world after the apocalypse, atomic explosions. You have crazy mutant monsters, crazy sects of people. The show is getting crazy reviews. It was written by a Nolan. What's Chris Nolan's brother?
Oh, yeah, because that's the
Brad,
joke.
Is it Brad Nolan?
One brother made a movie about the atomic bomb, and the other brother made a series about the world after the atomic bomb destroys everybody.
Jonathan Nolan, I think, is his name.
Yes.
Now, he famously works with Christopher a lot. He wrote Dark Knight series. He wrote Westworld. He is. I mean, I like him. Is what I'm getting. You know, I'm getting.
I do too.
He does
do
not
too.
Mess around. And I also love Fallout. It's got some great people in it. It's got our boy Walton Goggins in it.
I will watch anything because I love him.
Yeah, and I don't think you have to play the game. Obviously, they're not going to make a show that relies you to play the game. I think it's just that world, because that world is so rich in the game. They could literally take five elements from it and make a good television show. It's one of those open world. You can just go and do whatever you want. It's, you know, takes 150 hours to do all the things in the game.
Right.
But that gets me to my next point, Walton Goggins. He was in Carbondale because he's a cool dude. He was hanging out at PK's, the cool place to be. But no, and the co-op, the local food co-op.
Now, that's where I heard he was hanging out, was the co-op, because he was getting the really good chicken burritos that sell out in 6 seconds every day.
I thought it was Tara Reid and Dane Cook that were spotted at the co-op.
No, they were just down at Dale's Burger Shack. They were just down. Okay. Yes, okay. Yeah. They were in that vicinity, so I can see why someone said it. But they were Dale's Burger
Pretty
Shack.
Pretty fun, all these folks being in our town, huh? Pretty cool.
I can't believe everybody came.
Was.
And especially what I didn't understand is, why would anybody want to see an eclipse of a flat Earth? I mean, it doesn't make sense. Like, what am I going to do, just look at a straight line? I didn't go look at it, because I'm not even going to pay attention to a straight line.
Well, it's going to look like the eye of the sun. It's going to look like the eye of Saruman. Seen it.
Yeah, a vagina, yes.
Fire vagina. That. Big deal. Ooh, never seen that in Lord of the Rings.
Hey, did you hear Tolkien's...
That there's going to be a musical?
Have greenlit a musical version of Lord of the Rings. Good Lord.
I was instantly like, I have to send them the Arkenstone song.
You do. Arkenstone.
Legolas went to the battle deep of Helm. Arkenstone.
Greatest song for that soundtrack ever.
That I lost.
I mean, if people don't know, you're missing out, because Eastwood wrote that like a decade ago, and it's gold. It really was gold.
Fallout brings me to, have you seen the clip of Walton Goggins talking about his dad on Seth Meyers?
Yes. Oh my God, yes. Oh my God, it's the greatest thing ever. Shark, if you haven't seen this, you would love it. His dad walks around with signed pictures of himself. And hands them out to people.
I have heard that.
Like, yeah. I'm Walt Goggins' dad. Here's your signed photo. Yeah.
Yes. But then he also has photos of his son, and he also signed them. He also signed them. Yes. And he said that his outfit weighs like 40 pounds. He's just covered in like metal and leather.
Yeah, and he
has all the turquoise stuff, right?
Yes, just confidence.
Yeah, I was like, oh, I love it, because he was asking him about Baby Billy, and because Righteous Gemstones, we are rewatching Righteous Gemstones for a third time right now. We just restarted it because we love.
I haven't finished that last season yet. Like, I haven't. I don't think I've seen the Go Outside, Nerd.
Oh my God!
I don't think I've seen that yet.
Well, I will tell you, finish the last season, because it finishes. Wrong, let me tell you.
Okay, so the last thing I saw was the two brothers walk in, and the sister's making out with a guy after the tour, and they go off on her and call her a whore and everything.
Oh, so you're not too deep in it, because you get to see BJ's reaction to that, because BJ finds
the thing I saw is they tell him he has to get off the tour. That was the last thing I saw.
There's your YouTube channel, man. BJ Reactions.
And it's all just Righteous Gemstones, me laughing at BJ.
And BJ the Bear.
It's right. It's BJ Thomas.
BJ Thomas.
BJ Thomas. Yeah, Raindrop.
Billy Jack. Scenes from Billy Jack.
BJ. We're stretching here today, but we have Billy Jack scene to talk about.
Every now and then we'll talk about my buddy from second grade who was named BJ.
Yeah, I was going to say, I did date a lady named BJ. Briefly, she did not live up to her name.
Wow.
And that's why I called it quits. I'm a bad guy. Cancel. I'm going to say it. Cancel Eastwood. I sent you.
It's already trending. It's all over X.
I sent you an article, Rob.
I've got it pulled up right here on my. On my, no,
I didn't look
on
at it.
My Dell computer from 1987.
Nice. I think Chevy Chase streaking down the strip on during the eclipse will overshadow you getting canceled.
Oh, man.
Oh, Chevette. Chevette.
That would have made the news. I haven't read this article.
Hanging around fake flopping news. Like a bat sleeping through an earthquake.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
I've got the list pulled up, and I've only looked at the first three.
Okay,
and
I literally just saw the title and thought, oh, this might be good fodder for the show. And
I think this could be good fodder for the show, because I'm going to tell you right now, the one I see at number 23, I'm already like, you're wrong, this list sucks, I'm already mad.
All right, and it's the top 25 Gen X movies? Is that what it is?
Yes, Shark Thing, it's the 25 best Gen X films. Yeah, so let's come in at 25, which I'm already like, bleh. I think I'm the one person who didn't like this movie from our generation. Kids, I did not like it.
I didn't like watching it. I mean, I'm glad I think it needed to be said, but I didn't like seeing it. No, it felt bad.
Yeah, no. I
really
was not
like,
into it. No.
Shoot, what's that guy's name?
Chloe Sevigny?
Harmony Korine. I like Harmony Korine. It's a very brave movie. I didn't want to watch it, though. You know, same thing.
I actually watched that movie in public.
And I like some of his other movies. I like
Shark. I think I watched it at your trailer.
No, I only saw it. Did you and I go see it? Did you go see it at the student center? I saw it at the student center. It's the only time I ever saw it.
No, I think I showed up with a copy of it and put it in at your trailer.
Is that the movie?
Watched some of it.
It's the movie where
I don't think you paid for it. I did.
Kids are having sex. Kids are having sex and getting AIDS and stuff like that, right?
Yeah, it was just
Let me
bad.
Type that into my Google here. Kids having sex. Underage. All right.
3 seconds. 3 seconds. The FBI is
Wait, what's that sound?
Is that a knock at your door?
Oh, no. The ghosts are back, according to Bruce Springsteen.
Now,
use the Pete Townsend defense. Tell him you were just doing research.
Research. Yeah.
That's right.
The next one on the list, I enjoyed some of it, but I think he was trying too hard. And it's Linklater's follow-up to Dazed and Confused, which was Suburbia.
I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't great. Steve Zahn, couple people from the other films that you saw, like the dude who, I'm just drinking beers and gonna kick ass. I'm almost out of beer. He's a major character in it. Parker Posey, of course, is in it. Mm. It's just like,
I don't remember.
They're all hanging outside a convenience store, not wanting to become adults. Like that. That's it.
It sounds like his other movies up until.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. I mean, that's Slacker, what I'm saying. It's like he was, except Clark's, in 76, they seemed a little happier. By the 90s, they're completely depressed, which is probably true, but...
Yeah, but it's like now, Clerks much?
Yeah, now this is where I completely disagree with them, because this would be in my top five minimum. At 23, they have Chasing Amy. Oh, I think Chasing
I
Amy
it.
Should be
I liked
way
it. It's not a top five for
list.
Me, but it's a good movie.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was like a really good film. Like you know, Kevin Smith, I think, famously said... and I'm paraphrasing here. Clerks got too much love. Mallrats got none. Chasing Amy's my first true film. Something like that. And I think I agree with that.
It's probably.
I like Mallrats mostly because of Jason Lee. I think that's where he got.
Mallrats.
That was his coming out.
Was like a comic book, man.
It was great. But I mean,
just
when that Jason
book,
Lee's
awesome.
Coming out.
Yes, I believe you're right. Jason Lee truly becomes like a phenomenon because of Mallrats. Yes.
And
everybody loved Brody. Everybody loved Brody.
It famously bombed. Nobody saw it until it was
into
rental stage.
Stink bomb.
Yeah. I think my sister and I.
And now I have a
Mallrats
poster on my wall.
They were out of town, and Stephanie and I rented, because, you know, you'd rent it online. We rented Chasing Amy, I saw at Chris Field's house. It was Clueless, which is the next one on the list that I saw, we rented, and loved. So, Clueless, I think, is a great movie. I mean, it's just it's a complete remake of Emma by Jane Austen. That's all it is. Mm-hmm. But set in rich Clueless girl land, which is the same. So, I like that
Clueless
one.
Yeah, Clueless is classic. I like the... You can't go wrong with Clueless. I'm on board.
The next one on the list, I think, is also not high enough, and it's High Fidelity.
Oh,
for sure.
High Fidelity was really good. The book, I don't know if you guys read the book. The book all takes place in Britain. So it's interesting that they move it to Chicago.
Yeah.
But the only that thing was, that they really changed
part of Johnny's deal was like he wanted it to be in Chicago because he's a Chicago guy. Hey, yeah, I want it up here in Chicago where we eat dogs and stuff.
The only thing that pissed me off about the movie is, do you remember in the movie when his ex-girlfriend's dad dies? And they go and sit in the rain, and they end up having sex in the car, and that kind of gets them back together.
A little bit.
In the novel,
a little bit.
Same thing happens. They get there, and she wants to have sex, and he goes, "Do you have a condom?" And she says, "No." And he goes, "Well, then I'm not having sex with you because you've been sleeping around, so I'll probably get a disease."
Oh,
and
man.
Leaves her. Leaves her. He's rude. He's horrible. Rob is a way worse person in the novel than he is in the movie.
Talk about yourself that way.
I thought they should. No, completely. Okay, this one I think we're all three going to agree is rated way too low. Number 19 out of 25 is Fight Club.
Oh, yeah, that probably should be.
Fight Club should be way higher than 19.
I'm a little, I want to say, maybe I've just been overexposed to it. And the twist ending keeps me from rewatching that movie. But, yeah, I would agree. Yeah, somewhere.
See, I rewatch it because I just love the characters, you know, interactions.
I get that.
I just think they're great. But
It's so green and grimy. I
love it.
I still love it. I can't say that on air. But, yes, interesting thing about that movie for me personally. But go ahead.
The next one, which I think I'm one of the few Gen Xers who did not like this movie.
Okay.
It is Scream, 1996.
I do love Scream.
I didn't like it.
Yeah. Okay, Shark, you and I can go in on this one. I did not like this movie.
Yeah, it's close enough to horror that's, you know, I know it's a spoof, but it's just...
Look, man, they killed Drew in the first, 5 minutes. I like Drew at that time. You can't do that.
No, that's... They're just copying the best.
Know.
They're copying De Palma. They're like, what would De Palma do if he made a horror movie?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, he already
what
did it.
What would De Palma do?
And,
lots of cocaine.
So he would have sex with the actresses, threaten people, wear a stupid outfit on set all the time, try to look like a... I'm going to war, so I have to wear a freaking safari outfit? That doesn't make any sense.
Yes. No.
Wear soldiers outfit.
Chris Kattan was wearing a safari outfit the other night on the strip.
That makes sense. He was doing that orangutan character he used to do.
That's okay. That makes sense.
Yeah, totally. All right, what about number 17? When I saw this in the theater, there was only one other person there. And when the film ended, I realized it was Chris Rippey. He and I were the only two people there. We didn't know it at the same time. In Carbondale at the Fox East Gate. That's how long ago this was. All right.
Okay.
It is Gross Point Blank.
Oh,
I tried to like that and didn't.
I enjoy that movie a lot.
I don't like Dan Aykroyd, so that it rubs me the wrong way.
He does get killed. He does kill him.
That's true. It felt like a I want to be Elmore Leonard. I want to be Tarantino.
Yeah,
at the time.
It felt John Cusack was trying real hard to do something there, but I like the Gen X aspect of it.
Yeah,
I
don't mind it. I like Mimi. Is that her name? Mimi Driver. I like her.
She's
underutilized
yep.
in her time. But yeah.
And by the way, you know who was a scene stealer in that movie? And I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding at all. It's Jeremy Piven's.
Oh, man.
Jeremy Piven steals scenes in that
somebody
movie.
Somebody was talking the other day about Piven. What's he in? He's in a weird movie. Ricochet, I think. They were talking about... Yeah, they were saying that if Piven would have just let his hair go and become a character actor and not become an egomaniac and think that he needed to be leads in things...
Right.
He would have been like a... Because he was genuinely a good actor.
Yes, he was a very good actor.
But his ego and just mania, you know, wouldn't let him
do
that.
Yeah, I mean, the scene in the car in Gross Point Blank where him and Martin talk and he's just like smoking a joint with him and he's like, 10 years! And he's just like hitting the steering wheel. 10 years! You just disappear! And he keeps doing it. It's fantastic. And then when he finds out that he's a serial or a assassin killer, mm-hmm. you know, he goes... So I'm a car salesman. What do you do? What do you do? Just staring at him like you're a fucking killer. Sorry, beep, 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 beep. You're a killer. Okay, now, this next one I like as a movie, but it in no way should be number 16 above Fight Club or Chasing Amy. This is insanity. Okay. Empire Records. Come on, I love that movie.
See, the thing about Empire Records, it's not a good movie. That's the thing about that movie.
No,
that movie is. I love it. I think it's a barrel of laughs. My wife is one of her favorite movies. But I can step outside of my that love and say it's actually a really generic movie. It wants to be a John Hughes movie
in every way possible,
but it doesn't get specific. The difference between a real Gen X movie, a John Hughes movie, a Dazed and Confused movie is they actually have references. They're real bands. They're people. John Cusack, when you just said it's all real pop culture they're speaking of. Empire Records has none of that. Everything is generic. All the bands are made up. All you have are needle drops. You have needle drops of music, but there's no like a poster of Led Zeppelin in the background. There's no you know, I don't know. That's my complaint with Empire Records. It's just a generic version of a movie.
There should have been, I'll tell you a true Gen X way you could have handled this. Think about this. There could have been a wink, wink, nod, nod, nudge, nudge about an actress whose dad was in a band and she really just gets roles because of that.
That
could have been there. That's Gen X, man. That would have been Gen X to the core.
And
right
also,
the
part of the movie that bummed me so out was like, we are outsiders. This is where the outsiders come, where, you know, we don't fit in anywhere else, but we've created our own family. Here comes another outsider into them. What do? They call the cops on him.
Yes, I know eventually he becomes part of the family, but that's not how it starts.
He does, but at first they're like, let's get the man involved, even though they all apparently hate the man when they need
they
the
hate
man.
The man, but that's the first, because he's stealing CDs from the Empire.
And it looks like they
the
are...
Man, save the Empire.
It looks like
how
this
clever.
Happens a lot, because the way they react, you know what I mean? Like, this isn't just and this is how they react. They like chase them down and handcuff them. All right, go ahead. We're running out of time.
Okay, so the next one, Christopher Moltisanti hated this movie because he thought the guys were pussies. I'm using a quote. This is Swingers.
You know what? I never saw that, believe it or not.
Hey, Shark
has tell you
seen.
Something, Shark.
We should do it.
I don't think I missed anything. Yeah, it didn't
Let
seem
me tell
like
you,
I did.
Here's what I have to say about Swingers. Baby. I am going to use a cheer from college basketball.
All right.
Overrated.
Well, I tell you what got me is the people who were running around quoting that movie and seemed to really, really like it were the douchiest bags that I have. It was if those people are into this, I don't think I'm going to be into it. And I just stay away from it.
So I love that you say that, because Christopher Moltisanti in Sopranos sits down with Jon Favreau. And they're talking about Swingers, and he said, I don't know, man, those guys were kind of pussies, you know? It's like... They didn't talk. No one talked like that. They were kind of douchebags or whatever. And Favreau looks at me and goes, "That was kind of the point." Like, and so you're right. There was a whole group of people who didn't get it. You're so money. Like, dude, that's a douchebag.
We were talking about earlier. I forgot what we were talking about, and you said like people. Ron Swanson.
Homelander, Ron Swanson. Yeah, it's like you don't get it.
He's not to be emulated. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I'm going to tell you the next three to me are bangers. Bangers.
Bang, bang.
Number 13, coming in with love for Shark Diesel, Mallrats.
Hey, there you go. Nice.
Okay. Number 12, coming in hot, and I think Eastwood and I are on the team.
Here we go.
I think this movie didn't get enough love. Yes, it has some problems, but overall, it's pretty awesome, and that's Pump Up the Volume.
Yes.
Oh, it's a good film. I loved it.
Love that movie.
I thought you were
going to
say
Carlito's
Way.
Right now, if Evolution's not number one, I'm hanging up.
Oh, boy. Now, number 11, I think probably next to Fight Club, the most critically acclaimed film on the list that I've seen so far, and rightly so.
Schindler's
when
List.
When I first saw it back in the day, I thought it was overrated, and I think I just wasn't ready for what was going on. Uh-huh. But it is Do the Right Thing.
Oh, I love Do the Right Thing.
Yes, it's amazing. It's amazing.
From the first frame of Rosie Perez dancing to Public Enemy, I'm like, I'm in.
Yep. And see, I think halfway through, I'm like, there's no funny in this. We're Gen X. There should be some laughs. Mm-hmm. No, dude. This is not. There's nothing funny about this. This is brutal. It's a brutal day. What is it, 100 degrees 100, in the city?
It's so good. Yeah.
It is so good. Okay. Number 10, Totally Gen X, but way too high on the list for me, and that is Wayne's World, the original.
Yeah, that doesn't need to be on there.
Yeah, good, I mean, I good. Get why I mean, it's on there.
I like it. I know you why know. It's on there, but should not be that high.
I mean, yes. I almost sent you guys yesterday, I almost sent you a meme of Billy Bob Thornton on Wayne's face saying, you know, swing, what was it? What was the big line from Sling Blade?
French fried taters and mustard.
No, it was like the,
I'm gonna kill you.
Play on the swing thing, you know, like the
Sling Blade.
Remember the Wayne's World swing?
Swing Blade. Oh, yeah. Swing it, yeah. Blade. I don't
know. Yeah, yeah. So it's, you know, it's still part of popular culture enough that I get why it's on the list. You know,
I see
mean?
It on.
Yes. And it was fun. And it was fun. I mean, the first time we saw Tom Hanks come out and do the sibilance thing on the skit.
Yeah.
You know, it was cool. But we're, you
it's
know,
always
we're over
trending
it.
On Max. I think pretty sure it's on Max. And yeah. I always see it in the trending section.
And
like, man,
you know what?
Still
I get mad props. I get mad props to Swing Blade, by the way, because it was the first time I realized that Billy Bob Thornton could actually act and Dwight Yoakam could act.
You know what?
You didn't see that bank robbery movie, man. Dwight Yoakam is the bank robber. The Newton Boys. Did you ever see that one?
I did, but this came first. Sling Blade came way before this.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I think so.
We gotta look that
story
up. I think
Sling Blade's like 98 or 99.
If you like Billy Bob Thornton's there in it. Interesting story. That was a short film. And the director, I've told you guys before that Billy Bob's called like 12 Day Billy, they call him. That he was so annoying, so hard to work with, such an a-hole, that the director walked out on his own movie, his own vision, and that's why Billy Bob gets credit for directing it and writing.
Oh, wow.
He didn't actually do that much of it, but he's such an a-hole to work with that the guy was like, this isn't worth it, I'm not gonna put up with this abuse. So that's how Billy became.
Okay, by the way, Shara,
and you're right, Robbie.
Sling Blade
90,
is
96, 96 or, yeah,
and
I just looked
98.
It up. Yep.
Yeah, I was pretty sure that was Dwight.
Yeah, so
right.
We were close. We were right there.
Yeah.
Also,
time pre-internet,
old
either
Dwight,
one of those you could have stumbled
Dwight's
onto.
Acting skills were surprising. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, dude, he steals the scene.
Oh, he's
in
great.
Wedding Crashers.
Yeah,
he's just like husband. He just steals the scene. You know, he's comatose for me, baby.
He's got presence. He's got like he knows how to deliver a line. All right, what else we got?
He does.
We're running
okay.
short.
Next one is it's pretentious like Kevin Smith's first film, very Gen X, and I think it's a little overrated. But I think the swing it took is why people like it. It's Slacker. Linklater's first real picture.
Overrated. Yeah. Doesn't need to be that high.
You know, I mean, talking about UFOs, JFK, all this stuff. But, I mean, like, it had
it's
the complete outsider vibe that we talk about.
It does have
They're
that outsider
outsiders.
Vibe, but it's such a non-movie.
Yes, yes. And, it's complete slice of life. We just wander in and out of people talking about... It's like Seinfeld without the jokes. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't want to see that.
Okay,
you just
number
have friends.
Eight, yeah, oh God. Number eight, huge, huge, huge. This should definitely be high, maybe higher. Boys in the Hood.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Boys in the Hood's amazing.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing film. The next one is one that I think I get my Gen X card pulled for not liking this movie. It's Before Sunrise.
Oh,
I know it's Linklater.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen that.
It's Ethan Hawke and Julie Delpy whatever.
Yeah, Julie Delpy.
Have you watched all of them? Yeah. The first one bored me so much I never went back.
It's. I like it a lot because it's a bittersweet movie, and I like the reality of it.
I do like the bittersweet part of it. That I agree. I was telling my students about this movie yesterday. I was telling them about it.
Oh, and my wife loves it. It's one of her favorite movies, and it is a movie that is not made because you think like, this is just a love story, but it's not. It's literally people meet. They have like a layover or something on a train. Is that right?
Yeah.
And they meet and they literally just have a day together, and like the whole time you're thinking, oh well, they're gonna somehow or another make this into a thing, and they They don't? If I, it's just like,
no.
Right, see ya.
No, it says, listen to this final sentence. They decide to spend the day in Vienna and sparks fly. Travel, spontaneity, and the potential of something beautiful, especially when it comes to love, are hallmarks of Gen X films. The possibility, but you don't get it. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
It's just the possibility.
Number six, I was a dumbass. I didn't get this at the time. I liked the movie, but I didn't get how brilliant it was at the time. That's Heathers.
Oh, I love Heathers.
It took me a while to understand how good Heathers was.
We watch Heathers on a pretty reg, pretty on the reg here in the South.
The movie's great. Christian Slater kills it. Okay.
Way ahead of his time.
Number five. Yeah, number five coming in with a bullet, and bam. It is, you know, it's so Gen X. It couldn't be more Gen X if it had to. Say Anything.
Say Anything.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Absolutely Gen X as it could be. I love it. I love it so much. It's so good. And you know what, as I gotten older, you know what I love most about the movie is the Chicago stage actor that talked Cusack into doing it and 8 Men Out. What is his name? He's in the movie. Maloney. John Maloney. No.
I don't know
what I'm talking about?
No,
he plays
really
the dad
don't.
In it. He plays Ione Skye's dad in the movie. And then in 8 Men Out, he's the coach of the team.
Okay.
Oh, he played Frasier's dad.
Yes, he's Frasier's dad. Yeah, he was a famous Chicago stage actor. It's how he knew the Cusacks and the Pivens. And he was the one who told John, he's like, dude, if you don't do this movie and do 8 Men Out, you're an idiot. Like, you're a complete idiot. These are, like,
man,
these
I
are
loved
movies.
Loved 8 Men Out.
Yes, these are movies you've got to get yourself into. So
I prefer the number sequel, Nine Men Out.
9 Men In. I think that was a gangbang film, wasn't it? But anyway,
I like the
did I say that on 91.1?
Innuendo. Innuendo is
yeah. The third one was probably
was
my
a
favorite.
Baseball film. What are we talking about? It was a baseball.
The third one
film.
Was my favorite. It's called 9 Men and 1 Woman. Out.
Oh, no. Number four, I think probably could have been higher, but that's just me. Breakfast Club.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Yeah, that's
okay.
Cemented, I think.
That's what I've been sitting here thinking the whole time. So these are movies about Gen Xers, right?
Yeah,
or
this
about
is about the, Gen
what
X
it's like
life.
To be.
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I get, you see, because see, that's so weird, because, like, for us, you know, we're the 70s
we're late Gen Xers. We're the late end.
Yeah, I think
yes.
I think that, you know, if you were 65, 66 Gen Xer, I think that probably hits you pretty hard, you know, for me that falls more like a childhood movie, you know, The Goonies, or, you know what I mean, it was in that category. Red Dawn, you know, stuff I watched when I was a little kid. I wasn't old enough to identify with that then.
Okay, I think that's true, but as I got into teenage years, I watching it, I was like, oh, yeah, I get this movie way more. Especially since I'm white and went to an all-white school and everybody in John Hughes movies are white. But anyway, sorry, I'm doing a little looking back criticism, but...
well, I mean, it was all set in the suburbs of Chicago.
Correct.
So, yeah,
correct.
You know.
Okay. Number three, I can't. You guys are probably going to laugh and be shocked because this movie, while total Gen X, should have been like 25. I can't believe it is this high because it's not a good movie, and that is Singles. Yes, I know it's about my Seattle scene that I loved.
I'm surprised to hear you say that. Because when it came,
movie,
when it hit,
dude.
You loved it. When it hit, you were a fan. Yeah.
I loved
but
it, but
that was
the thing.
You know.
But here's the thing. Do you know what I really loved looking back was the soundtrack.
Probably the music, yeah.
Soundtrack. Yes, that soundtrack. I wore the tape out twice, and I had to buy new tapes because I had worn them out so much I loved them. So, okay. Number two, I opened my dissertation with this film because I think it's so purely Gen X, and that's Reality Bites.
Yeah.
Way more Gen X than one.
Yes. I mean, this is us, right? It's 94, and they just graduated from college. This is around our time. You know, we would have been freshmen in college, whatever. I totally get it. Now, number one Gen X film. Does anyone want to take a guess?
Yeah, Evolution.
No.
I can't.
So long, boys. See you next week.
There's no more. It has to be Dazed and Confused, right?
It is not Dazed and Confused.
What? Okay.
I can't believe none of us thought of it. It's the most obvious choice, and actually, I think it's the right choice.
I can't. I'm sure I'll, when I hear it.
Okay, 1994. First film by a guy who keeps himself quiet during the movies. It is Clerks.
Yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah. You know, for some reason, I thought Clerks was on there earlier.
Yeah, no, I think it's when we were talking about it.
Yeah.
Well, there was some other movie that you were describing I hadn't seen. I was like, Clerks?
Oh, it's Suburbia. It's Suburbia.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
Suburbia. I remember seeing it, and I'm like, this is like a poor man's
which is funny.
Clerks.
Because... Smith saw Slacker and said, "I can do this," and that's why he wrote Clerks.
Right.
And then,
he
saw Clerks. And
by the way,
I can do that better.
Here's a couple movies that I'm a little shocked aren't on this list. Number one, and I'm just hear me out. We're all gonna laugh, but it's Gen X, and it's more Gen X than some of this. PCU, terrible movie.
That's
but
true.
It was Gen
that's
X.
We talked about that last.
So
that's a
Gen
good
X.
Point.
We talked about it last time. Yeah.
I'm going to throw another one out. Shark mentioned it, and I couldn't believe it wasn't on here. Goonies. Goonies is a Gen X film through and through and through.
Yeah,
that's that film.
I mean,
yeah.
So how is that on this list?
I mean, I think like Goonies
Candles.
And Lucas and all
16,
that stuff.
That's what I'm saying. 16 Candles is not on this list.
I was surprised there wasn't more U's on there, honestly. I was thinking,
yes. As we
were
going through,
that's what surprised me was when they threw a Hughes out there. When you hit Breakfast Club, it was like, now wait a minute, that feels really out of place. It feels like they've had this theme of, 1970 to 1980 Gen Xers. You know what I mean? And all of a sudden, then you throw John Hughes in there. But yeah, if you're going to throw one Hughes in there, I think it opens them up to all of them. And there's a bunch of Hughes stuff that should be on there before.
And
I'm not
even joking. Yeah. I'm looking at how they set up their list. What year does Evolution come out? Like, seriously.
I don't know. It's probably around late mid-90s,
2000. Oh, I thought it was 2001, 2002 would be my guess.
Well, so I'll look here real quick.
Okay, it's 2001. The reason I bring this up is this article says, Gen X are someone born from 65 to 80. So movies from the 80s, 90s, and even 2000s have encompassed the lifestyle of a Gen Xer.
So there you go.
So here's 25 movies that defined Gen X and at least do above average job of explaining it. So the fact that 16 Candles and Goonies are not on there and PCU, I think it's a drop ball. And I'm sure there's others.
Dazed and Confused. I know Dazed
and Confused. Is it because it's set in the 70s? That's why they don't want to touch it?
It doesn't.
No.
Let me ask this. So, the Gen Xers are the people who are now making the content. You know what I mean?
You can tell when you watch shows, all the jokes are Gen X jokes.
Yeah.
Every Teen Titans episode we watch, my wife
absolutely.
Is like, these writers are our age. Exactly.
Dan Harmon.
Dude.
Everything
Family
Dan Harmon.
Guy is one big Gen X
right,
joke.
Family Guy. You got it.
Community.
Does that not...
Community.
Well, guys, I hate to cut off this great conversation, but we got to get to it. We have very little time, and I guess
I'm sorry.
No, we're just going to cover one episode because the second episode.
You boys know when I get into Gen X, I can't.
Oh no, it's fine. It was a good time. I enjoyed it.
So we don't have to talk about the crap episode.
We can skip. We can just hit the highlights of the crap episode.
Okay.
So
because the first episode was a banger.
First episode was so good. It was. I remembered as soon as I saw the name of it, I was like, "Man, Shark's gonna love this. It's got some history in it. It's got like a bunch of philosophy in it about the idea of what is history and what is fact and truth." Rob's gonna like it.
How about the argument over light and light particles? I mean, come on, this is great.
Right.
Is that Marcel Proust at the end? Is that right? Is that who?
Yeah. He quotes Keats. Beauty is truth. Truth is beauty. Then we're doing Proust or Proust. However
Proust,
pronounce it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Things of past remembered. Is that right?
Remembered. Yes.
Yeah. Just God, man, what an episode! Like the whole time, I was just like, man, this is just firing on all cylinders, as they say.
Yes.
Like,
and I want to say one thing real quick. I was mad 30 minutes into it, because there was so much Maurice, I wanted to be sitting in a room with you two and watching it. Maurice's capitalism,
dude,
at all costs is so gold.
I was,
no pun intended.
I was cackling, like just cackling the whole time I was watching it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So, yeah.
He's going after the pint-sized half-breeds.
Oh
my
man.
God. He said it.
Yeah, Froggy. The frog, he keeps calling him an Indian frog. Chris is fishing. He starts seeing a bunch of clothes. There's a man in the ice. and they find his. Chris has some artifacts of his. He's got his watch. He's got his diary, and this is when it gets interesting. He is from 1815, and the diary claims that Napoleon. He's with Napoleon, and they have escaped. They skipped Waterloo. And they they came to Alaska.
I've got a whole theory about this episode. Don't let me forget.
Joel confirms it's a body. Of course, everyone is instantly like, "Oh, he looks. He's got nice eyes. Oh, he looks like this. He's a hard worker." Holly said, "Like they all have theories about it."
Yeah, right.
Fleischman, of course, is like, "This is a fake. There's no way this is real." And then he gets body tissue. Ed is. They put it in Holland's walk-in cooler. Yeah, he's got a huge
hey, we've had lots of bodies in here. They don't bother me.
Oh, man. But, yes, Maurice is just on fire. I wish I could have wrote down all the things he says. One of them I wrote down, he says, "The most crucial piece of equipment in any operation is the man in charge."
Right. Capitalism.
It's like, damn, Maurice.
CEO, baby.
And then there's this. Oh, and I love Ed and Ruth Ann's Ed going to work for Ruth Ann, and their kind of budding friendship. And Ed's paid this guy to read his script, and he's.
And how genius is she? Like when she lets it loose.
Yeah, well, I was gonna say like, the more and more you know about Ruth Ann, the more you will like her. I love that she talks. This comes back many times. She talks about her two sons. One of which she's
One's the failure.
Yeah, one she's very proud of.
I like how she explained that, though.
Yeah, he could have been, like, he really could have been something. Like, he was a great musician, but she never put challenges in his way. And he just went off. But she says the one she's proud of is a long-distance trucker who's also a poet.
Yes.
A specific type of poet. And I missed what she said. It was an odd word.
I don't remember.
It was like... Parishal poet, or I can't quite remember. She's really proud of. What was that?
It made me think. It made me think it was religious poetry.
That's what I thought.
That's what episode. What is the episode? I'll look it up.
Episode. Let's see. 5. Yeah, episode 5, season 3. The body in question is the name of the episode. But the other one that she says, he's an investment banker, and Ed says, "Oh, I'm sorry, Ruth.
I'm sorry."
Yeah, right.
Oh man, Northern.
That part killed me. I think I sent you guys a text when that line popped up. I had to stop it and pause. I was laughing so hard.
Yes, that's right. You did. You just sent investment banker.
That killed me. I was like, "Oh, that killed me."
So Joel will not accept the backstory of history being changed. He keeps talking about, like, you can't change history. What's Joel's stance? The facts are the facts, and the truth will... That's Stevens. Joel is the truth will always... The facts will change to accommodate the truth. Stevens is the facts. The truth will change to accommodate the facts. They have this whole town meeting. They have a town meeting. Everybody's there. It's a big, heated town meeting. Maurice, of course, doesn't care about any of this. He's got plans drawn up. He's got, like, a museum. He's got the Iceman in the middle of it. He's got the artifacts set up. He's going to have underground parking so they don't destroy the beauty of this place.
Right.
He's got it all thought out. And then the town is like, we don't know what to do with this. And then the what do they call themselves? The Telekanutans come in, and they say, "We're here for the body," and they've been waiting for the return of this guy. And he's part of their ancestry. Like he got busy with some Telekanutan generations ago. And bred these kind of short French-looking natives who wear Madonna shirt.
Hey, just remember, as far as I'm concerned, after 100 years, carrion becomes memorabilia.
That's right.
Right. Right.
The Madonna shirt was gold. It was gold.
I also wrote down Ed's Neil Young shirt, which he wears quite often. It's sweet. It's a blue tie-dye. It's just got a peace sign on it. It says Neil Young World Tour underneath it. We have another story, which is barely touched in it. you could blink and miss it, where Shelley can't have a baby. Right. I have a side note. There's Dwight Yoakam song playing in the background, in the brick. Holling has another secret, though, and it's this whole mix-up of the, you know, secrets. She thinks he's mad. His secret, I love his secret. He's secretly a blue-blooded aristocrat.
Yes.
And he's so ashamed. Right. He's so ashamed.
Because they were awful to the people.
They were awful to the people. They were. He says at one point, they still celebrate my uncle's death in parts of France. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
Like Abe Lincoln? Well. Not exactly.
Jeez, man. Like, he was so bad to the people that he's just like a famously bad guy. And I love it. It's so cinematic that Holling gives this speech and then he says, "The DeVincour line dies with me." It's right. Like, holy crap. This is a man who knows himself. Like, it's just, I don't know, everything about Holling, the more you learn about Holling, the more I always like him each time you watch.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, by the way, I looked it up. Sorry. Oh, yeah. He's a pastoral poet.
Pastoral?
Pastoral. These are poets
Flowery,
who focus on the beauty of country life in a modern world.
Okay.
Ah.
Yes.
Pasture. So pastures, not pastoral.
Yes, pastoral. Yes.
Yeah, you're right,
so
though,
think
Shark.
About it.
Whatever
so think
was,
about it.
When
that's
I heard
what,
that,
I
did
mean, this
think,
whole
like,
show is a pastoral poem. Like the beauty of this rural place.
You're right.
In a modern world that doesn't make sense. So yeah. I can see why Ruth Ann loves it.
Yeah. And I like that.
Oh, anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I like the. I also just was thinking as I was talking about Holling, the back and forth dichotomy there between him and Maurice. Pierre brought about this feeling of horror in Holling because he remembers who he is. You know what I mean?
Right.
And, like, his horrible people because he came from these aristocrats, these blue bloods.
And Maurice wants to be the horrible
and Maurice
people aristocrats.
Wants to be,
right.
That's exactly right.
And they're best friends.
And they're, yes, and they're best friends. And that's the reaction that each one of them have. And, like, you know,
yes.
It's eating them both up in a separate way. And, oh, my God. Long story short, we're going to be off air here in a minute. The natives steal the body. We don't know how. Shelley walks in for some bacon and the cooler's been shut off and there's a puddle of water with his hat left in
but
the
wait,
puddle.
Don't we figure out how they did it?
Oh, I don't know.
I thought, okay, so then maybe I read too much into it. When we see
you think Marilyn did it?
Yeah, I think Marilyn helped him. When she's standing there watching him go away.
Yeah, she was definitely in on it. But yeah,
But you're right. We don't know exactly how they did it. You're right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Shelley goes in. Seems odd that they're in the middle of lunch or something, and she goes in to get some bacon, and it's just gone. But yeah, they get the body, and Maurice just flips his lid. He's like, I'm going to track them down from Skaskadoo to Taramacaco. I'll leave no stone unturned. I'm going to find those pygmies.
How about this?
Before you get into it real fast, we're out of time for WDBX. Thanks for listening. We love you so much. We're going to go over to the podcast 20 and 21, wherever podcasts are found. Love you. See you later.
Adios.
Okay, so how about Joel's dream in Poland with the prophet Elijah?
With Elijah, yes.
Showing up to talk to him during Passover?
I can slow down a little bit here now, unless you guys have super, you know, you need to get out of here quickly. I love that this is the beginning of Joel's kind of conflicted battle with faith and science.
Yes.
And this is an ongoing thing after this. It just becomes more... They explore it, I should say. And yeah, man, what a scene. I love that scene. And
yes.
And I love that I love Elijah's speech to him about, you know, and he says, I'm Elijah. And, you know, of course, Fleischman, the denier of all things, the skeptic, says, where's your flaming robes at? Where's your blah, blah, blah?
Your long beard. And,
yeah. And he's like, well, it doesn't matter. Even if I had those things, you wouldn't think it was me because you've never thought it was going to be me. You open the door
right.
a year and you don't expect me to come in. It's just something you do. So it doesn't matter what my appearance is. And then you have this great scene oh man, I love this scene where Fleischman is sitting on the bumper of his truck and he's just got his head in his hands, and O'Connell walks by and she's like, hey Fleischman, what's the matter? You know, some mean to him. What, do you realize what a fucking loser you are? You'll never get to fuck me. you know, she's like, he's down in the dumps and she's like, is this about Pierre and you blah 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 and you denying blah blah blah, and he's like, no, I'm depressed because I think I agree with you people.
Right.
And he's just like, I've changed, I can feel it. I don't, this isn't right.
I'm not laying in bed. I'm not me. I'm 4 million years of DNA.
That's right. My name's Yoel. Yoel Kabbalah. She's like, Fleischman. He's like, I'm just, he's like, I'm not, I'm still here. It's still me. But yes, I love Joel's depression over faith and science, and like the willingness to, like, and so Shark, what do you think about the history?
Yeah, I was gonna say, Shark, what's the history going on at this?
Because I know it's all
in nothing real. I mean, it's good,
but I mean,
historical
the French
fiction.
Were up there, right? I mean, during this time, 1850s, the French weren't up there
in 1850, in 1814.
1814.
Yeah.
No. And I mean, you know, think about it. They couldn't have come across Canada because they lost Canada to the British in 1763.
Right.
They have, you know, in 1814, I mean, hell, Napoleon had sold, you know, the Louisiana Purchase was, what, 1803, 1804, something like that. So
right.
You know, there's no route through the U.S. They don't really have any. I mean, they messed around in Mexico, but that was, like, later in the 1800s.
Well,
that was Napoleon III. So they really don't have any place. There's no, like, to get on a boat in France and end up in Alaska in 1814 would have been tough.
So how about this one? O'Connell claims that there were Russian fur traders coming across at that time, and they could have had ties to Russia, any or not whatever Russia would have been. Is that possible at all?
Well, not necessarily, given the fact that, you know, if you think about just a couple of years before this is Napoleon's famous retreat from Moscow, where he tried to conquer Russia and the winter got him. And, you know, you have to consider that if he were to take that route, he would have to not only get all the way across Europe, but then he's got to get all the way across Russia. And think about what Russia looks like in 1814 past Moscow. I mean, you know, there's nothing. So it's not very plausible.
Okay.
The logistics of it don't seem plausible. Yeah. Like, what you would need, like, if it was a British guy there, absolutely. Because the British guy could have sailed from, you know, England, he could have sailed to Bermuda, they could have sailed down to Argentina, and then, you know, I mean, they had holdings and stations where they could stop and replenish and refuel
now,
and so on and so forth, you know.
I know.
Yeah.
Okay, now,
later there's an episode where I believe, what's her name? The Russian, Anastasia? There's an episode where there's a flashback, and they talk about Anastasia is hiding out in Sicily. Sicily's prone to have all these people, but that's more likely, is what I'm saying. Then
okay, what about this?
Yeah, that's more historically plausible than Napoleon for sure.
All right,
yeah.
Shark, I googled something here, and I was like, French history in Alaska. And they bring up, and I cannot pronounce this in French, so A Port de France. This is from 1786, when a French expedition hit the northwest coast of Alaska. Jean-Francais de la Perouse commanded the French exploring expedition, two boats. They were there for a while. Then it just, like, jumps from 1786, and it says an oral history got recorded in 1886. About this, but you're right. I don't see anything about them being there at that time.
So they're just flying. They're flying fast and loose, just having fun there.
Yeah.
I have a theory about this.
Okay.
Here's my theory. I have decided that Sicily, Alaska, is a place, whether through dreams or reality, that time, space, and everything can be changed. And so, the Napoleon was there in a different reality.
Yes.
Somehow, you know, like, not because yet. I think this place has this epicenter for all this going through different cultures, times. Yeah. This is my theory. Totally could have happened.
I can't wait
till Cecilia Alaska is some kind of anomaly.
I can't wait till we get to season six.
Okay. I'm just saying, this has been my theory as I'm watching this
show.
You
might be onto something. Let's see here.
Twin Peaks, anyone?
I'm being a froggy.
Yes.
Frog. Did anybody notice this? Because I don't know if I was paying attention. But I'm looking at the music that was in the episode, and it says here that at some point the song "I Got You" by Dwight Yoakam was played.
That's right. That's what I said earlier. I said some Dwight was on in the bar.
Oh, okay. I didn't know because I don't think I know that song.
Now I also noticed
there's another good country tune in there too, and it was by the original. It was a song that Waylon made big, but it was the original version of it.
Oh, okay.
Jolie Louise by Daniel Lanois.
Now here's the thing. No. That was not actually in there. It's supposed to be in there, but Muzak was in the Amazon. It's when Chris is talking about Pierre on the radio, and he says, "This one's for you, Pierre." It should be a song called Jean-Louis Jean-Pierre. It's "How Jean-Pierre, how do you do, Jean-Pierre, and it's a cool island French song. It was not the song. Some other weird Muzak-y.
Yeah, the only thing I'm seeing in here, there was a song called "Harmony and Sport" by Henry Soroka, something by Verde, something by Meek Stevens, Rue St. Michael, Jolie Louise, "I Got You" by Dwight Yoakam. Then it says "Hot Club Hop" by They Don't Know, and then "The Telecons" by David Schwartz.
Oh, that's just theme.
Yeah. So. Anyway, I don't remember the Dwight Yoakam, but I don't know Dwight Yoakam's music well enough that I would have called it out.
See me through. Something like that. Yeah, okay. I got you. All right. Joe, we're all jeans. And then it ends with, like I said, the Marcel Proust. I wish I had the quote here.
Well, I might have it for you.
Oh.
Well, that would be lovely. Let me see if I can find it real quick.
So we see,
I was looking at it just a second ago.
We see the tribe, we see the natives, and they have the body in question, and they have it wrapped up in their boat, and they're paddling down the river. And then we see, like Rob said, Maryland is watching them from the shore.
Yeah, so you guys didn't take that as she was involved? That was just me?
You know, I didn't... I knew that she was involved, but I didn't think about any specifics of it. You know what I mean? Like, I knew, like, of course Marilyn knew what was going on. Like, I bet all the natives knew what was going on.
Are you ready for the Proust quote?
Yeah, let's hear it. So the body's floating down the stream, and they're taking him back home. All right.
"When from a long distant past nothing persists, after the people are dead... After things are broken and scattered, still alone, more persistent, more faithful, the smell and taste of things remain poised a long, long time, like souls, ready to remind us, waiting, hoping for their moment amid the ruins of all the rest, and bear unfaltering in the tiny, almost impalpable drop of their essence, the vast structure of recollection."
Man.
Yeah. And that's one sentence. It's like Thoreauian sentences or whatever, you know, that we English majors joke about. Uh-huh. One sentence with a bunch of commas.
Oh, dude, I have given up on periods. I am a comma man. Most certainly, yeah. I can string 18 or 19. Every now and then I'll throw a semicolon in.
Hey, well, I mean, my students will tell me nonstop that whenever a period's used in a text, you sound angry. And I'm like, no, it's called punctuation.
Said that.
Oh,
yeah,
and they're like, no, sounds like you're angry. What is wrong with you?
Well, I stopped here, using ellipses because they said it made you look old. So I was like, well, I guess can't do that.
Just stick with.
And I don't like that because I enjoy ellipses. Using ellipses or ellipses or whatever you say those.
Ellipses? They make you look old. Ellipses,
they make you look old. Yeah. Oh, no.
Or menacing, I guess, you know.
Menacing.
Like, if one period bothers you, three's going to really...
Oh, three's going to take it to another level.
God, what do I do?
Oh, dear Lord. Oh, dear Lord.
So, yeah, I wrote here at the bottom, top 10 episode. Like, that episode was just so good.
That's like the one I told you the other day that I felt like everything was tied in perfect. Like, it was just like a perfectly written episode.
Yep.
Now, the next episode, we don't have to talk about much of it. Started out great. Like Shark said, you get Chris having this vivid dream, all these African dancers and playing music, and he's out in these long johns. And I liked that it wasn't actually, he was like sleepwalking, because when he woke up from the dream, he was actually standing outside, like looking around, like, whoa, what's going
right.
on? You get Joel is taking a shower. O'Connell shows up. She's like literally breaking the roof above him while he's
breaking through, the roof.
She's kind of a slum landlord, isn't she?
She's a little bit. She's trying to get out of her. I love that Fleischman's kind of trying to cut a break on rent, even though he doesn't pay the rent.
He doesn't pay it. Yeah, he's just not even him.
The episode does start off with Chris talking about dreams. I always like when there's a dream theme going in Northern. He's talking about, who did he say? Bertram Russell? Is that right?
Bertrand Russell is a major philosopher in the 1900s, or in the in the 20th century. Yeah, he was the big American philosopher that we were all talking about.
Okay, I knew. I thought I would. I thought you might inform me who that was. But he's talking about dreams, and then we see Bernard is back, his brother, and his dad left him some money, and we get a little bit more background that they have discovered, which they never talked about before. That when Chris's dad was with Bernard, he was a totally different guy, and he had like savings, and he
he
was like an upstanding citizen,
upstanding family man. Like he was looking out for his family, he had money to leave him, etc. And then when he was with Chris's family, absolute nothing, just a drunk guy, kind of just didn't leave him a dime. Pretty interesting. He tries to give him some money. Chris decides that the dreams mean he needs to go to Africa. Now, the only problem I had with this story, and since you guys had never seen it before, well, I had a couple problems with it. But did you very quickly know, like, oh, this isn't his dream. It's clearly Bernard's dream.
No, I didn't. At first, I didn't pick up on it,
Oh, okay. No. So you just thought Chris was having some weird dreams, and how is he tying himself to Africa?
Yeah, which makes more sense why the episode's called Roots. No, I'm serious. I wasn't being a dick. I mean, I'm being serious.
Yeah, no. I guess I'd seen it enough that I knew it was going to happen, so I just wondered if what you guys take on it was until you realized, like, oh, wait, I'm having your dream.
Yeah, it just wasn't working, but okay.
Yeah, it was a little off.
I mean, Chris declares himself a person of color.
That was the part that was like, you know, wait a minute. But you know, I thought about that when you see him and he's got his hair in cornrows.
Yes.
And people were doing that though. That was a thing, right? Yeah. Remember that was a trend. So I mean, it was like, you know, watching it now, it was like, ooh, that doesn't feel good. But then I was like, well, wait a minute. I can think of three people I knew who literally were dressing like that then.
Yeah. I mean, at least he wasn't being, like, mean appropriative and, like...
But it was... Yeah, it's weird watching it now.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think, from Chris's standpoint, it's almost like the Joel thing, I think, where he was saying, like, this is man's origin here. I'm going back to... the roots of all things. I want to go back to where it all started. Right. But yeah, it comes off real weird. Just like I declare myself on that person of color. Like, whoa. The other story was just I'm glad it's the last time we see her. Fleischman's fiance, Elaine.
God. So she's gone. Please tell me she's gone for good.
I think that's it. I don't think we ever see her again.
Oh, thank God.
And you know, the only thing good comes out of it is Maggie realizes she likes Joel.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's just kind of excruciating. Now, the only good part is getting to see Adam Arkin, the son of... I'm not even going to attempt to do it. Alan Arkin. Sometimes I can do it. Sometimes I can't. Adam Arkin being a jerk to everybody. He gets to cook. He makes a bet with Holling. He needs money. He comes to Fleischman. He's like, I need $100. He's
like, give me some money. $100.
He's just yelling at him. Where's my money? I'm not giving you anything.
But how about the fact he's cooking all this amazing food? Because, like, all this time I thought it was kind of...
You thought it was BS?
He really is a cook. Like, yeah. You know, like... But and then telling him where to go in, like, Africa or something like that.
Yeah, if you're a Dar es Salaam, be sure to hit Louis on Front Street.
Don't look at me like that. It's good or something like
that. He says, like, don't trust the Michelin guide on that one. Yeah.
Yes. He says, well, at one point he says, when you get to the Indian Ocean, take a left.
Right. Take a left.
Yeah, like, that really helps.
Yeah, he's not wrong. They were going to East Africa, right? They're like, where absolutely. Are you going? They're like, we're going to East Africa. He's like, all right, so when you hit the Indian Ocean, take a left. That's perfect direction.
And I love that Chris hasn't even thought about where he's going in Africa. He's just dumbfounded. He asked him where he's going, and he's like, I haven't really thought about it. Do you buy a ticket to Africa? It's not how that works. And then we see Bernard driving off. I was like, because it ends up he's having Bernard's dreams, and Bernard's supposed to go to Africa. Makes much more sense. And we see Bernard driving off, and Chris is like, Keisho, brother, off to Africa. I'm like, are we to believe that Bernard drives all the way across Alaska back down to Seattle every time he comes to see Chris? Or is he driving to Africa?
Yeah, right.
Well, all he's got to do is make it to the ocean and hang a left.
That's right. Well, maybe if you're right, Rob, maybe you can just find a portal somewhere.
Absolutely. You can just he warped there immediately, like Mario Brothers. He found a new place to warp. Wow.
He's on the little map. He's got the map. Yeah. He's like, what's this thing over here, this little Sicily island? Whoop, 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 whoop. Bam, you show up in Sicily. Much like he showed up there the first time. Remember, he couldn't remember. He was like, I don't know. I got on my motorcycle. I've been dreaming, and I just took my helmet off, and I'm in Sicily,
Alaska. I'm sure you
Alaska.
Have been dreaming, sir.
It's all a dream. Are you guys going to be mad if this is like a St. Elmo's Fire thing? Not St. Elmo's Fire. What was that
St. Elsewhere.
St. Elsewhere.
Where an autistic kid is looking at
a snow globe, and it's all just been a fantasy in his head.
Or Bobby comes out of the shower. By the way, it had some banger music that I don't know if was in. Like, I'm looking at this, and I see now why you celebrated the music in the show. Because I'm on this app that tells you everything. So there's Man Jane by Leon Mobley. Mm-hmm. Poor Boy Blues by Chet Atkins and Mark Knopfler. Wild Side of Life by Hank Thompson.
That's the song. Okay. I thought it was in the last episode. That's this one.
Okay.
I'm Blue Again by Patsy Cline. Day Day Priscilla by Leah Linganzi. Caballo Vejo by Robert Torres. Bill Street Mama by Cab Calloway. Okay. And then something I cannot pronounce. So I'm just saying, like, that's in one episode. That's just whoever did this show had an incredible taste in music.
Yeah, even. Even if the episode was bad, the music.
Oh my god! But it was such a terrible episode. I literally I was sitting here tired because, as I told you guys, I hadn't slept. And that first episode, man, just kept me going. I'm like, oh my god, this is just hilarious. It's great. And that second one came on. I'm like, oh boy, I could go to sleep during this.
I'm sure I could see that. Because we were slogging through it last night. I was like, oh man.
Well, and usually if Chris is a main feature of an episode, it's going to be pretty good.
Yeah. Well, once again, no Maurice. There was no Maurice, and no Ed story either. I don't think Ed had a story in part two, or in the second episode that I could remember that was good.
Not that I.
And Maurice, I don't recall seeing him at all. It was a stinker. The next one I don't think is a great one, but the one after it might be. I can't quite remember. I don't have my remote here to pull it up. But I saw one of them. Oh, A Hunting We Will Go is the next one. I can't remember any side stories, but I will say that it's hunting season. And
Wabbit season!
Fleischman decides he shouldn't be a hypocrite. And if he's going to eat a bird, then he should be able to kill a bird. So he goes hunting with Chris and Holly. I remember it being fun. I don't know. We'll see how it holds up. So what movies you guys want to do? I hope the next time we do this in person will be a week from us in real time. Because this will come
out. And so we need to watch a movie before we get there, right?
I would like us to do, if we could do, I don't know, how do you, we can do this. Whatever, the audience can maybe have some input. So what do we think about this?
So we'll see what Bill G says.
we could, I don't know, I'd like to do a movie, but I still want to keep doing the Northern. But I would like
so
to
we
have,
gotta watch our two North. So we need to watch like an '80s movie. Is that what we're thinking?
If we could do
Summer School, since school's almost out.
Oh, nice! That's a great movie.
Now
I'm Chainsaw.
Chainsaw and I'm Dave. Chainsaw and Dave, man.
I tell you what I saw. I saw a couple things, a couple options. One.
Oh, it's on Prime. It's on Prime.
Oh, sweet. I want something I can really dig my teeth into, like character-wise.
It does have Courtney Thorne Smith in it.
I can make fun of the voices and characters. The original, the 89 Batman 1 and 2 are on Prime. I would love to rewatch the original
Batman.
Oh,
you mean with Jack Nicholson and Danny DeVito?
Batman, come over here, you motherfucker.
Get out of Gotham!
I'm sure I told you guys this before, but when we went and saw that, I was expecting TV show Batman, like campy Batman, like a comedy.
Oh,
yeah,
I did. That's what I watched before that. Eighth grade or something when it came out, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
And that's what I watched as a child. That was the Batman I knew, but I had a lot of comics, so I was hoping. It was dark. It really didn't have that much Batman comic book stuff in it, though, honestly.
No.
But it was still fun. I still loved it.
I loved it, but I went the other way. I had heard that it was dark and everything, and so in my head, I was expecting... I didn't know this at the time, but I'm telling you, I was very underwhelmed, because I guess I was thinking something like The Dark Knight with Ledger. Mm-hmm. I thought it was going to be something dark like that, and I'm like, really? This is still kind of campy.
It's campy as all.
We all walked in
around the museum. Come on.
Yeah, it's so campy. I like the. I like that Jack Palance is in it.
Yeah, hey, Jack Palance is good times.
You're my number one guy. I remember all that. And I kind of want to see that, watch that. We can decide, I guess, before then. I would like it if we could do two movies. And then two Northerns. That way we'd have a movie per episode, and then one episode is just Northern rewatch.
So do we just want to do the two Batmans? Like, we know that's there. We can just put them in place, and we can watch them at our leisure.
Well, I was
going to
say
week.
That. There's also Summer School. There's also a movie I've never seen from 2002 with Sylvester Stallone called I See You. I-E-Y-E See You. It looks horrible.
So Batman it is.
So yes, Batman it is. That's more of a couple. I think that's more of a, this podcast really ties the room together type of movie. Hope you guys like that one. Let us know. We plan to do one of those.
Sly Stallone stars as an FBI agent. Where is this? I had it. FBI agent Jake Malloy can't nail a serial killer who's been targeting cops. The killer's already killed 9. Not only does the killer despise policemen, but he also has a grudge against Malloy. Mm. Oh, boy. I'm already like, what? I don't even want to read anymore.
And I guess he probably calls people and says, I see you. I'm guessing. It seems like what's happening in the movie. Spooky. It says from the director or writer of Scream, I believe, was one of the taglines for it.
Ew.
So it's a spooky mystery. It's a thriller.
Spooky. Spooky, spooky.
So, yeah, let's do the Batman. Ooh. I would love. I cannot
wait. Yeah, let's do these first two Batmans.
I cannot wait to rewatch
the one with Walken. I don't know if you guys remember, but in the second one, Walken is the bad guy.
He's a bad guy. And he's got a son named Chip. My big boy, Chip. Chip's my big boy.
Yeah, and Michelle Pfeiffer's in
it,
too.
I love when Walken... she's sex pot. I love when Walken gets low, which he does a lot in this movie, where he's like, my big boy, Chip. I know we could do it. You could do it, Chip. You're my big boy. He's got a little balance thing going on. All right, I'm excited about that. I will see if my son wants to rewatch them. He's never watched them. He's probably going to tell me they're stupid looking and lame. Oh, he just said, from upstairs,
from
he just
the
said,
mouth of babes,
he
Tim
just
Burton.
Said, you know I will. So, all right, let's hope to God this recording saves and everything's okay. Next time you hear us, hopefully, we'll be together in the same room. Not only that, you're going to be able to see us in glorious
together.
HD.
Together.
Talking about my best again. Friend. We're the three best friends.
All right. See you, everybody. We love you. We'll see you next time. Hear you next time.
Adios.
Peace.